are live on Facebook. It is Friday, April the 2nd, and I'm so thrilled to be here with my two very good friends, Margarita Chang, CFP Pro, and Cynthia De Lorenzi, who is my collaborator and co-conspirator in the Incandescent Women Project, What's Next Journal. So it's Friday, and we are having a special episode of Margaritas with Margarita, because Cynthia is going to take the reins today and interview Rita, who is the cover story of Incandescent Women magazine. She is the entire April cover story, advising women on how they can invest, make friends with money, and live a prosperous life. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, thrilled to be here as the support system today. And I'm going to throw it over to Cynthia and Rita. So take it away, ladies.
I am so excited to be here. And anybody who's known me and knows that I do love to interview people, one of my greatest things, I have a true curiosity about people. How did you do that? Why did you do that? Where do you go from here? So I'm really excited because I have a background. Actually, I was a Series 6 broker a number of years ago when my husband owned his own broker dealer, and he was a financial advisor, but not a CFP. He was a stockbroker, which is two different worlds. So I know how he got into the field and I know how I got into it, but how did you come to be a CFP? What made you decide to choose that path for your career?
Well, first, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. Why am I a CFP? You know, I think I was always destined to be a planner. I'm the eldest of three girls. I was always good in math and statistics. And in college, I studied finance and East Asian language and literature. My first job I was an editor of a newsletter for English speaking investors. And this job was based in Tokyo, Japan. I liked it. I was using all my skills, but something was missing. I felt a little bit removed from the end user, meaning the client. So I decided that I really wanted to take the concepts we use in corporate finance and apply them to individuals and families. So concepts is like a personal balance sheet, which is like a net worth statement, statement of cash flows, which is a budget. So knowing that, I embarked upon my journey. And I understand that when you're in 20s, people might think, well, what in the world do you know? So that's why I was very serious about making sure that I prepared myself to become a planner.
That is really interesting. So it's that background and math and statistics, which means you have a unique mindset from my mindset. And I know Hope's, because we talk about statistics all the time. It's one of those classes you take in college. If you survive it, you feel like it's incredible. You know, one of the things that I'm really interested in, and the fact that you're CPS, and I think about this in analogy to where we are today in our educational system. Why don't we prepare when we educate people coming through the school system to be prepared to handle money? I mean, we talk mathematics, but we don't talk money. You know, when your kids get out of high school, they don't know necessarily, you know, how to open a checking account, the importance of your checking account, how you save money, why you should save money, that they get a certain age and they send them credit cards in the mail without anybody preparing them for what it is. It's not free money. So I'm really interested in that, especially when people come to you at some point. When does it usually in somebody's life dawn on them, I think I need a financial planner?
Sure. Well, I think sometimes people don't even know what a financial planner does. When they think financial advisor or financial planner, I understand these terms are slightly different, but I'm just going to put everything together for purpose of this conversation. When people think financial advisor or financial planner, they think, oh, I don't have any money to invest. Or they think of like Wall Street or Boiler Room or something like that. Those are the images that come to mind. But what a planner does is helps people identify their goals, clarify their goals, and prioritize them. I think it's important, as you mentioned, to teach kids the different aspects of money. So we earn money, we save money, we share money, which is charitable contributions. And so we said earn, save, spend, and give and share. So it's important that we make it relevant and age appropriate. But I think that one of the things I absolutely love about being a planner is I am right brain and left brain. So I have the opportunity to, you know, be introspective and ask questions and just sit back and listen and then analyze things and come up with solutions to help clients.
What is the most common age that people come to you? I mean, is it in their 30s? Is it in their 40s? Is it early career, mid-career? What is the most common trend you see?
I would say that people are coming to me earlier. I would say the life triggering event that prompts people is starting a family, right? Because if you have two incomes, right, you probably are getting by, but if you're expanding your family, you know, there are other considerations. It's not just college, but insurances, life insurance, disability insurance. What does it look like if we go to one income or both of us part-time, childcare? So I would say what prompts people, you could say buying a house, but starting a family.
How is it people find you? How do you find your clients and how do your clients find you? I mean, those are two different things. How do you put yourself out there so people discover you and feel comfortable coming to you? And then how do they find a CFP that's right for them?
Sure. So how people find me is referral, you know, word of mouth, that's tried and true. But now with the internet, people find me by, you know, the articles that I write, the articles in which I'm featured, social media, like LinkedIn, you know, affinity networks, things like that. Now, how do people go about finding a CFP? So the first place that I tell people to go is, you know, your community, meaning if there's somebody that is a similar stage of life or someone who you think it could be a positive money mentor, you know, ask them if they have a financial advisor. If that's uncomfortable for you, I completely understand. A great resource is the CFP Board's consumer facing sites called letsmakeaplan.org or LMAP. And you can go there and type in your zip code and what areas you're interested in, and many names will come up. What I really like about this site is names will come up, and then you can go to those financial advisors' websites. You don't have to worry about getting a phone call or an email. So I think this is a great way for you to learn more about financial planning as well as how to find a CFP for you.
That's excellent. What are the most common questions people come to you with? If I was going to come see you, what would I be most likely asking you?
Sure. So these are like the top questions. So the first thing is, you know, what services can you provide to me and how do I pay you, right? Second, will you be the only person that I'm working with, or do you bring me on board and I work with someone else? We talked about money here. You know, what arrangements do you have? Meaning, this is an important one. You want to understand if you're obligated to turn over your portfolio. That doesn't mean it's bad if you have to, but it's sure good to know that. Conflicts of interest, professional relationships, disclosure items. But this is the question I think is most important that I tell people to ask. Hope knows that these are my bonus questions. You know, what prompted you to become a planner? What do you enjoy most about what you're doing? And then the final one, you know, what type of clients do you enjoy working with most? So those are questions that may not be on any checklist, but I love stories. So why are you a planner? You know, it's good to know. You know, what do you enjoy most? And these are just great questions that you can ask because personal finance, Hope knows I said this all the time, is personal. So you need to feel comfortable with that person.
What do you enjoy most about being a financial planner?
Sure. I absolutely enjoy the relationships and I enjoy knowing that I'm making a difference in the lives of my clients. Another question I guess I forgot to mention is asking their approach about investment management. Are they more strategic, like buy and hold, or are they more tactical? Do they move money around? That's really important to know. What I enjoy most about being a planner is the work is intellectually stimulating. It's never boring. It's emotionally gratifying. And I know that I am making a positive impact in the lives of my clients every day.
What are some of the questions you ask your clients when you're helping them begin to make this to make this journey of working with a financial planner? What do you ask them? What should people be aware that you will likely ask from a be asked from a financial planner?
So sure. So the first thing I ask is, you know, what brings you here today? What help are you looking for from a planner? More specifically, what are you hoping I can do for you? That gets them talking. Another set of questions is, you know, what are you most proud of? You know, it's so important to start out with some positive information, affirmations, you know, and you can definitely find one. The fact that they're there today is positive, right? They're asking for help. You know, kudos to them. It takes a lot of courage to ask for help. And then, you know, this is another way of asking the question is like, where would you like to improve, right? And they'll tell you, they'll say, you know what, I'm most proud of the fact that, you know, we save for retirement. We think that we need help, you know, organizing and prioritizing our goals. So they'll tell you, I think that, you know, this is the power of introversion. I'm an introvert. And sometimes when I don't know what to say, I'll just ask an open-ended question and I'll let them talk.
That's really good advice. So and you learn so much more that way. So tell me, what is the most fun and gratifying part of your work?
The most fun and gratifying part of my work is definitely sharing in the success of my clients. Of course, during more difficult times, I'm there for them too, but it is so amazing when you provide a resource for a client and they're like, hey, Rita, you know what? That link that you shared with me, that was really helpful. You know what? I so appreciate what you told me. As it turns out, I'm able to do X. The most exciting thing is, you know, I was working with a client who experienced a very challenging divorce in 2010, and she got remarried in 2018. She called me in 2017 when she was engaged. You know, that really warmed my heart. So I was there for a difficult time, but I was also there for her for a very special time.
You know, when you're working through the journey of working with a CFP, I would think that would be a very intimate relationship. I think you're going to have the opportunity to be candid. Do you find that it's very important to be candid with your clients? You know, call balls and strikes. Hey, you're screwing up here. You're spending money. I mean, do you review that where they're losing money, where they're maybe not being as prudent with their money and other shifts they make? Or is it just like, okay, here's your plan and we're done?
No, you are absolutely 100% correct, Cynthia. It can be really challenging. As a CFP pro, we need to make sure that we're candid with our clients, right? We need to use language that is honest. We have to make sure we don't use jargon. Sometimes the most difficult thing is we can't necessarily tell clients what they want to hear. So Hope knows there was a situation where someone wanted to retire when they're 57. 57 is not old. And I could have said, yeah, sure, go for it, right? I mean, at that time, this is during the global financial crisis. I'm not being rude or difficult. I'm like, I appreciate where you're coming from. I know it's a very stressful time. There is nothing wrong with taking time off from work. However, in Northern Virginia, if you were to stay here and retire at this age, it would not be sustainable for the long haul. Having said that, if you can relocate to another place and reduce your expenses, this is feasible. So I didn't tell them they couldn't do it. I gave them options. So with any goal, there's the amount they can spend. There's also the rate of return on their investments. And then there's the time. Time meaning, when do they want to reach that goal and how long is that goal? So yes, there have been times where I've had to have difficult conversations with clients, but I do so with in a respectful, mindful manner.
Who are the core people when you're planning your life and, you know, it's beyond career, who are the core people that you think we should have as in our corner or our advisors as we work through all the aspects of life that we're going to confront, expected and unexpected?
Sure. Particularly for entrepreneurs, we may need more. But I would say you definitely need a tax advisor. You definitely need a financial advisor, property casualty. So an insurance advisor for your home as well as your auto. And then an advisor to help you with, you know, health insurance. You may get that through your job, but if you are an entrepreneur, you may need to have an independent advisor to help you with health insurance. I don't sell health insurance, but I can inform people on what's appropriate, so there's no conflicts there. And then someone to take a look at life, long-term care, disability insurance. And then last but not least, I would say estate planning. It's always important to make sure that it's not just about your assets, right? Your money, but really power of attorney, people who can make decisions for you when you're not able to, someone you trust, as well as advanced healthcare directives. So I would say, I know that's a lot. We think broadly, tax advisor, attorney, other business attorney, estate planning attorney, financial advisor, and insurance advisor.
How do you get paid for your work? I mean, I've always wondered that, you know, if you're a stockbroker, you get paid. It used to be on trades. I mean, there's different ways it works now, but how is it that you're compensated for the work you do?
Sure. So I'm compensated when I do financial planning for a client. The client pays me a fee for the financial plan. It could be for the engagement, or if someone says, you know, I need something specific. What do you mean, Rita? Can you analyze the most appropriate time for me to take Social Security? That's also a financial planning fee, so it does not involve the sale of a product or service. Then I am compensated by what we call AUM, assets under management, a percentage of someone's assets under management. And last but not least, this is what we call sales-based compensation or commission. Because I'm independent, I do have the ability to sell insurance from different carriers, and I'm pointed with the carrier. I don't mark up the insurance, but if someone does need insurance and they purchase through carriers, I'm paid directly from the carrier in the way of commission. So financial planning fees, asset-based fees, and then if appropriate, commission from insurance.
How often should somebody expect, if they're going to work with a financial planner, how often should they expect to be in communication with you? Is it monthly? Is it twice a year? What is the usual path if you're working with a CFP?
So sure, I think that I have heard that you want to receive at least 18 touch points from your advisor a year, like 18 times. Like, I don't think my advisor calls me 18 times. 18 times, that means the statements that you receive. It means their newsletter. It means a voicemail, a handwritten note, a Zoom meeting. So 18 points of contact throughout the year.
Interesting. Yeah, that's good. You really do your homework. I really like that. So my last question for you, and I hope the audience is enjoying this, because I love asking the questions that everybody should be asking. You know, it's like all of the other questions that we don't always get to. It's like, let's get down to it and talk about it. What are you seeing culturally now, or generationally, I suppose I should say it, between how people are looking at preparing for the future? I feel that money for a younger generation is very different than what it was for my generation. I mean, how we looked at it, maybe Hope's is a little bit different and her son's is different. And like my daughter and daughter-in-law are just getting ready to go meet with a CFP for the first time. And I was really impressed with that. I'm not sure that my generation necessarily thought of going to it. So are you seeing a generational difference between your clients and how they're coming to choose to work with a CFP?
Yeah, I am. So I just had this call with someone at 4 o'clock. This is generational. It also could be comfort. So I'm noticing that younger consumers, so that could be prospects or people who become clients, are more comfortable with the notion of paying for advice. They want to know, what's the best way for me to pay for my student loans? You know, how much money do I put for a down payment? They're used to that subscription service or that business model where you pay as you go, right? They may not have portfolios to turn over. So the asset under management model may not appeal to them because they might not have assets. They're what we call high earners, not rich yet. They like that transparency. Here's what I'm paying and here's what I'm going to get. Other people may be more comfortable with asset-based compensation, meaning paying for their advisor that way. I just had a call with someone today. He's like, so Rita, you charge your clients' financial planning fees. Well, I just do it for free when they give me their portfolio of $1 million. I said, that's not wrong. If that's what works for you and the people you serve, then that's what you should do. However, if they're like the children of your clients or somebody who's high income earner and they value advice, then that business model may not align with how they want to pay you. It's not that they don't want to pay you, but they can't. So I would say that's a trend that I've noticed. I've also noticed that people are becoming more particular with their investments, not just the costs and fees. They want to know, you know what, am I investing in companies that use child labor? Am I investing in companies that manufacture in China where the Uyghurs are being persecuted? They want to know answers to these questions. So people are more engaged and they expect a certain level of transparency from their investments. And they want to make sure that they are doing good in the world as well as doing good for themselves.
Are people asking you about Bitcoin now and doing their financial planning?
So the concept of cryptocurrency is definitely coming up. You know, it was coming up so much that I actually read up on it because I know if you say to clients, no, that's risky, don't do it, they're going to want to do it. So what I did is I actually wrote a series of three articles for Kiplinger. I actually worked with my editor and I said, listen, I know there's not a lot on the site about this and Kiplinger doesn't really promote this. I get it. I don't want to promote it either, but I feel like we need to write about this so that we are presenting both sides of the story. So yes, people are asking, they were asking about cryptocurrency. They're also asking about CBD.
Interesting, really interesting. The world's really changing and you as the financial advisor really has to understand all of the components. I mean, if I came to you and said, I've got $6 billion in cryptocurrency, what would you say? Which I don't, I have so much trouble grasping the concept of cryptocurrency. So don't anybody call me and sell me a yacht because I don't have 6 million in crypto. But how do you describe this? And what, you know, what if somebody came to you and said, I've got all this crypto, what would you say?
Well, I mean, the first thing I wanted to say is if people do want to access cryptocurrency, there are ways in which you can access cryptocurrency that are more transparent and have lower volatility. So you can access cryptocurrency through some ETFs, some exchange traded funds. If somebody had 6 million in any one asset class, you know, I would encourage them, you know, to be diversified because you don't want to put all your eggs in any one basket. But I always tell people, just like anything, it's important that, you know, you understand the risk and reward scenario for every asset class. So even cash has its risks. The reward is, you know, your money's there, it's liquid and you can get to it, right? You log on, you're going to see your cash. That's the reward. It never is going to go down in value. But the risk is that over the long term, it's not going to keep up to pace with inflation. So I think that when I explain things like that to clients, they're like, yeah, Rita, I get it. Like, you're not trying to force me to do something that is not in my best interest. You get me. And so I think when we explain the pros and cons of anything, people are more receptive.
Fascinating. This has been really good. Okay. Usually Hope and I get to interchange here. So Hope, did we bring up anything today that you find really interesting or you want to know more about?
I get to interview every Friday, but I would like to talk a little bit about the relationship between women and money and what your experience has been. Are women more passive or aggressive? Are they less confident about their finances? What's your experience been?
So sure, you know, there was a retirement readiness survey that was conducted, and it said like fewer women than men have done an analysis regarding retirement readiness. Now, I'm sure there's some truth to that because we talked about the income gap and the wealth gap. But it also could also be a situation where women were more comfortable admitting, you know what, I never did this in retirement analysis. So I think women are a little bit uncomfortable discussing money. You know, and there's several reasons for that. You know, first, sometimes I've written about this a lot You know, money means different things to different people. For some people, it means security. For others, it means power. So just being able to acknowledge that is a definite step in the right direction. I also think that in the past, women relied on others. I'm not saying that's bad. It's okay to rely on others, but you don't want to be, as my dad would say, be in the dark. It is okay for you to have someone take more of a lead role, but you should at least be informed and allow yourself to be invited to the table to engage in these conversations. And that's what I do. I think being a woman CFP, you know, in the beginning, it was really hard because, you know, I was the only mom. First, I should filter back. A lot of people would, you know, do searches. They're like, I want a CFP in Bethesda. I want a woman CFP in Bethesda. I want a woman CFP in Bethesda with kids. Well, I was it, right? I want a woman CFP with kids who is, you know, understands what it's like to work with multiracial and multigenerational households. Well, I'm it. So I think that people are becoming more proactive about getting help because it's no longer, you know, seem to be shameful. It's okay to ask for help. That's a sign of strength. You know, that's a sign of courage.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I'm so excited to have you be the cover story of Incandescent Women magazine, where Cynthia and I are interviewing all kinds of amazing women. And usually we have a cover story and then a whole bunch of women on the sidebar. But for this issue, we decided that what we wanted to do was feature all of your shows. So this is actually episode 10 of Margaritas with Margarita, where you're on Incandescent Radio and on Margarita Ching .tv. So you have your own YouTube channel through us, which is so exciting. And you're giving all this wonderful advice that we've been doing since January to women. So I thank you for being out there and really being an advisor. And Cynthia, of course, it's always great to have you ask some questions because you are a wonderful interviewer and very curious, and that's all wonderful. So I'm going to leave the last word to you, Cynthia.
I just am so thankful for you. And I think your comments about women are really important, especially now. One, women control more than 50% of the money in the world. I mean, at least in our country, women have and are really the decision makers and the financial controllers. However, it seems like for many reasons, they sometimes are the least informed. And so I think it's really good. I think your point of reaching out and asking questions, building a team and talking is exactly what you should be doing. And the worst thing you can do is not ask. And there's no dumb questions. So I think it's really good. And I'm so glad we had the chance to have this conversation with you today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I mean, it is very exciting. March was Women's History Month. April is Financial Literacy Month. People are thinking about their finances because of taxes. So I just want, you know, women to feel more confident about money and their money decision. Their ability to make good money decisions.
Awesome. Yes, thank you, Hope.
Yeah, well, thank you, ladies. This is great. And we're all about empowering women. And when you have financial confidence, financial stability, you have more power. So we're going to keep talking about that every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern with Margarita Cheng, CFP Pro. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs with my collaborator, Cynthia DeLorenzi. And we will all talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.